It has now been a year since Ethan Chapin, Madison Mogan, Zana Kernodle, and Kaylee Gonzalez lost their lives to a senseless murderer on the University of Idaho campus. The man charged with this crime, Brian Koberger, now sitting in jail, awaiting trial. All this weekend, we're going to take a look back at the conversations, investigation, and interviews that we've conducted the last 365 days on this case as we continue to await justice for those four college students. Four killed for what? The case against Koberger. The story all weekend here on the Hidden Killers podcast.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast.
The Hidden Killers podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
We are talking sociopath, psychopath, personality disorder, whatever you want to call it. And I don't like to jump down the label hole because it kind of, at the end of the day, does it really matter what one is labeled? Isn't it more so about what one actually did? But sometimes it does provide some context as to how the individual got to where they're at today that we have to figure out as we peel back the layers of the onion on. We are talking with Donna Anderson today, author and a sociopath profiler, about Brian Koberger. And I'm just going to start here and let you kind of take where you want to go. What, with everything that we know about Koberger, what thus far has been your take?
Well, what's really interesting about this case is that I did a couple of articles related to him on the Love Fraud blog. And what I did was I compared what's known about his behavior and his actions with an instrument called the Psychopathy Checklist Revised. And that is an assessment that was developed by Dr. Robert Hare, who is like the guru of psychopathy researchers. And the instrument was designed specifically to figure out whether or not people who were incarcerated would reoffend once they were released. So it definitely has a criminal aspect to it. And that was the objective, to find out who upon release would commit crimes again and who wouldn't. And this PCLR has been validated by hundreds of studies as it's considered to be the gold standard of evaluating whether or not somebody is actually a psychopath. Mm-hmm. And so I compared what is known about Koberger's behavior to the items, because there's a list of 20 different behaviors. And depending on how many of them, how many boxes somebody checks, that is the higher the score, the more likely they are to be considered psychopathic. And believe it or not, he didn't score very high on that document, on that test. And I was a little shocked by that, because intuitively one would look at this behavior, of course, assuming that he's guilty, which we don't know yet. But one would look at the behavior if he were guilty, and you'd think that, my goodness, this guy must be a raging psychopath.
Let me ask right there. What kind of questions are asked where he didn't score that as high as you thought he would? What were some of the parameters there?
Okay. Well, there are 20 different items on this list. And the way it works is that somebody can be scored either a zero, meaning they don't show that behavior at all, a one, meaning they show it sometimes or somewhat, or a two, meaning that they, you know, this totally describes their behavior. So there's two main segments to it. One is about the antisocial behavior. So those items were a need for stimulation and proneness to boredom, and a parasitic lifestyle, and poor behavior controls, and sexual promiscuity, and a lack of realistic long-term goals, impulsivity, irresponsibility, early behavior problems, juvenile delinquents, and parole or probation violations. So those are all related to antisocial behavior. Then it has emotional and interpersonal traits, which includes glibness and superficial charm, a grandiose sense of self-worth, pathological lying, conning and manipulativeness, a lack of remorse or guilt, shallow affect, and that means shallow emotions, callousness and lack of empathy, and failure to accept responsibility for their actions. And then there were two other factors. One of them is committing a wide variety of crimes and having many short-term marital relationships. So those are the 20 different things that are measured. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at it, he only ticked four of them.
How difficult is it to fill that out, though, with the information that we do know about him? Do we have enough, or is there enough out there to accurately check or not check those boxes?
We don't know. I mean, right now, you know, all any of us know is what's in the media.
Sure.
And, you know, in order to do this, because I was actually trained in how to do these evaluations. And what you're supposed to do is gather up all the what's called the file, you know, any records of somebody's behavior, and then also do an interview with the person, and then perhaps also do interviews with other people who like maybe the friends, maybe the family, other people, to get a larger picture of what's going on. So I was shocked to go at this, because the only ones that are apparent right now from the media reports, mm-hmm. are these four, like, yeah. Need stimulation and proneness to boredom. I mean, you know, if he did something like this, I guess he needs stimulation. Grandiose sense of self-worth. I mean, he definitely wanted people to know how intelligent he was. Mm-hmm. Shallow affect, because, you know, multiple former classmates and other people commented about how he was expressionless and had flat emotions. And then callous and lack of empathy. Well, if he actually did this, then you'd have to be callous and have no empathy in order to carry something out, you know, like this crime. So, I did that comparison early on, you know, before they released the information, like from the police report. And so if it were that he actually did these things, there's the possibility that we would see a lack of remorse or guilt. But so far, he hasn't said anything about the crimes, so we don't know what that would be. But the other thing is that even though he's not coming up high on this particular measure, there are other ways to measure psychopathy. There's at least two other programs that are considered to be alternative ways of diagnosing someone. And this might be one of those cases where the instrument doesn't work, mm-hmm. you know, where one of the other measures is needed.
What are those other measures?
Well, there's one that's called the Psychopathic Personality Inventory, mm-hmm. and that one is actually a self-report test, and it has 154 items divided into eight categories, and it measures things like Machiavellianism and social potency, which means, you know, how much charm and interpersonal dominance somebody has. Mm-hmm. There's also a section on cold-heartedness. And then carefree non-planfulness. And what that means is that lots of people who are psychopaths essentially have no plan for their life. And, you know, they just, you know, do whatever they feel like it. Fearlessness is another thing. And then blame externalization, which means that they blame everybody else for what they do. Mm-hmm. Impulsive and immunity to stress. So, you know, maybe he would score higher on this particular test, but it's 154 items, and I actually don't know what all those items are, but that's a possibility, because you're talking about cold-heartedness and fearlessness, sure. and blame externalization, so maybe that's a better fit.
Sure. So to find all that out, I mean, you'd have to sit down with someone to truly make an accurate diagnosis of an individual. But from afar, are there ways to accurately diagnose someone without being there and actually having a one-on-one conversation or relationship with someone?
Well, actually, the PCLR, the first one that I talked about, is designed for that.
Okay.
I mean, it is actually designed to that somebody could look at the record and evaluate what the person did based on the record and based on information from others without actually talking to the individual themselves. And so that's why it's kind of odd that that particular one is coming up short so far.
I mean,
we'll just have to see exactly what happens. But like some of the items on that list, I mean, a lot of people certainly didn't seem to think that he was charming, mm-hmm. And there was no. Well, I guess there was a record of early behavior problems if you count the heroin addiction when he was in high school. Irresponsibility, it doesn't sound like he's irresponsible. You know, he's working as a teaching assistant, as a graduate assistant. Mm-hmm. Sexual promiscuity, that doesn't seem to fit. You know, lack of realistic long-term goals. Well, he's trying to be a criminal profiler, so that seems to be a goal. So overall, it just didn't work, which was surprising.
Sure. So we don't necessarily know what all the boxes would be checked for him as of right now. So it's hard to truly put a label on someone. Does someone like this always get a label? Is there always, we're so quick to say, oh, it's a sociopath, it's a psychopath, it's a this, it's a that. Is there going to be some sort of diagnosis for a human being like this? Is there always a diagnosis for someone who does something like this?
Well, one of the things about diagnosing anybody is that people are not cookie cutter.
Yeah.
And if you look at some diagnosis for people, like a therapist may say that, somebody is antisocial with narcissistic tendencies, or something along those lines, because people are different. And, and this may be one of those cases where, he doesn't fit the mold of a mass murderer, even though if he becomes convicted there's an awful lot of evidence that points in that direction. I mean, of course, we haven't had the trial yet, so innocent until proven guilty. But what was in that police report is like, oh my goodness. I mean, they it looks like they have some serious evidence about what happened. So I mean, people are different, and sometimes the labels don't necessarily totally apply.
When you look at this whole case and him, what do you see? What, based on your experience, not just the test and things of that nature, what do you think we're going to learn about this individual that we have not learned yet?
Well, assuming that once the court hearing is held and he actually did these things, and as I said, the evidence mm-hmm. looks pretty strong at this time. One would have to have no conscience and no ability to love in order to do something like this. So it may turn out that he does fit these other definitions of psychopathy. Now, I mentioned one of the alternate. Another one is called the triarchic model of psychopathy. And this has three different categories of traits. There's disinhibition, which includes impulsiveness and weak behavioral restraint, hostility and mistrust, and difficulties in regulation of emotion. So that's one. The other is meanness, which is deficient empathy, lack of affiliative, contempt, predatory exploitativeness, and empowerment through cruelty. Well, that sounds just like him, Mm-hmm. And then boldness, which is dominance and social assurance and venturesomeness, and then emotional resiliency. So maybe with this particular model, it would come up that he does fit psychopathy.
How, if in any way, will this play a role in a trial, should it go there?
My guess is that would depend on whether or not either the prosecution or the defense wants to bring it up. Because there's a lot of debate on how a diagnosis should be used in a trial. Mm-hmm. Dr. Robert Hare, who I mentioned previously, his view is that people who are psychopathic know what they're doing. Okay, they're not delusional, and they made the choice to do whatever behavior that they've done, and so therefore they should suffer the consequences of that choice. However, there are other cases in which people have actually avoided the death penalty because they were proven to be psychopathic, and it was something that happened since birth. And, you know, people have actually gone into trial. I mean, defense psychologists have gone into trial with showing their brain scans and showing how their scan is not normal, that, mm-hmm. you know, parts of the brain that light up in normal people just don't even function in a psychopath. And so there's at least a couple of cases where people have, I don't know if they've been found innocent, but they have gotten lesser sentences because they were considered to have deficiencies due to the psychopathy.
Is this something that could be brought up in the defense in the upcoming hearing in June with Koberger? Because who knows what they're actually going to bring up, because the evidence is pretty damning against him. My wonder is if they're going to make some sort of a plea of, look at this man's history, maybe brain scans, maybe other things to show that this individual, functioning in society, but missing something and obviously not able to successfully, healthily function in society, more so in the lines of, you can put him away for life, but let's not kill him, because in the end, this person didn't have the whatever it was to tell him not to do this. I think it'd be a far stretch probably at this point, but I don't really know what angles they're going to take. All we heard from the Koberger camp as far as, I look forward to being exonerated.
Right. So I don't know what the defense strategy will be. If they think that it will gain them something, maybe they will. But there's also the possibility that if he were diagnosed as a psychopath, some courts consider that to be an aggravating factor, that it actually, you know, proves that he actually did this and he has no conscience and he should be locked up and the key thrown away. So I don't know what their strategy will be, but it may or may not come up at all.
That's what I wonder. I mean, when someone exhibits these traits and it doesn't come up at all, is that something that an evaluation could be done or could be ordered even by the prosecution to further prove that maybe he does have something like that? Would that help their case?
I think that what would happen is the prosecutors would determine whether or not it's in their benefit, to try and prove that. The mm-hmm. case, it may not be. I mean, from the prosecution point of view, if they open up that can of worms, that, you know, this person has mental problems or it has a personality disorder, well, then that gives the defense an opportunity, you know, to argue their side of the case.
Sure.
So there's a possibility they wouldn't bring it up at all. Guess is if anyone was going to bring it up, it might be the defense.
Yeah.
But I don't think that we'll be able to know that. We'll just have to see what happens.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any of our breaking updates and discussions on the cases we're following here for you. You can get the complete list of the cases in the episode description. If you want an ad-free experience, well, check that out on Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate that. Your support keeps us on the air. My name is Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.